Anyway, now we come to chapter 13. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name, meaning there's a religious dimension here. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. Remember, Greece was like the leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, Persia, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion, Nebuchadnezzar. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. So here we see a composite of those empires that were prophesied in the book of Daniel. So there's a certain sameness about these empires. They were different. They did have different characteristics. They had different strengths. Nebuchadnezzar's empire of Babylon, depicted by a lion, you know, where the strength is in the head. And Nebuchadnezzar had this absolute power, and, you know, in carnal terms was a great monarch. And then you see, you know, the bear, Persia, big, powerful, heavy, but clumsy. The leopard, Greece, Alexander the Great, moving so fast. And here's this composite of these empires, which all impacted the people of God, the physical nation of Judah. And, of course, later on, the Roman Empire was to impact as well spiritual Israel, just as physical Israel was affected by the empires of the period before the time of Christ. And behind them all is Satan. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. Now, I'm reading quite a few verses here before explaining them, because we need to understand here there's a duality in prophecy here. Because there is the fulfillment that took place over a couple of thousand years, but there is also a fulfillment which is going to take place immediately prior to the return of Jesus Christ. But here we see, if we go back to verse 3, I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded. Now, you can look at the Roman Empire in history, and historians will tell you that in 476, the Roman Empire fell. And that's really rather an arbitrary date, because the Roman Empire had been tottering for some time. And even in 455, the city of Rome was taken over by hostile tribes. But it wasn't until 476 that you had a different king in place, and the Roman Empire was no more. So to the whole world, it seemed as if the empire had been mortally wounded, as if the beast was dead. But then, of course, it was brought back to life again. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. Now remember, I've said that today we're living in an aberration in history where the United States is the dominant power in the world. This is a time where the world is dominated by an Israelite power. Before the United States, Great Britain was the dominant power. Again, an Israelite power. So all we've ever known, really, is a world dominated by these two nations descended from the tribe of Joseph. But the rest of the time in history, the world has been dominated by Gentile powers, where there has been a completely different mindset. They have been built on control, upon authority and submission, despotism. You go back, you know, even in fairly modern times, in the 1500s, for example, when the world was dominated by the Habsburgs of Spain and Austria, you know, you had an absolute monarchy, absolute Catholic monarchy. And, you know, later on, even when France became the dominant power, Louis XIV was the monarch, again, very Catholic. And Louis XIV considered himself an absolute ruler. His famous expression was, "The state, I am the state." You know, the monarch, I am the state, I am France. And, you know, that was very much the attitude. But when domination moved to the Anglo-Saxon powers, you didn't have that same mentality, because power is dispersed and there's a constitutional form of government and so on. So it was quite different. But we're also going to have, again, in the future, we're going to have a return to this system, because the beast power is going to be revived one more time. And we know that because the prophecies make it absolutely clear that these 10 kings come together immediately prior to Christ's return. And when Jesus Christ returns, they actually make war with the Lamb. You see that in Revelation chapter 17, in verse 12, it says, "The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour, for a brief period of time, as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them." So we see this beast power is again going to be there immediately prior to Christ's return. Look back at Daniel chapter 2, and perhaps we can move that map on to the Roman Empire, please, Daniel. The Roman Empire there. These maps are just to help you a little bit to get an idea of what we're talking about. But, you know, here is that fourth empire. Now we need to go back to the Roman Empire. Pretty big, as you can see. And if you look at Daniel chapter 2, beginning in verse 31, here is an explanation of Nebuchadnezzar's vision. "You, O king, were watching, and behold a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay." You know, here, the head of fine gold, Nebuchadnezzar, its chest and arms of silver, two arms of silver, the kings of Media and Persia, its belly and thighs of bronze, the two thighs of bronze, the Seleucids and Ptolemies that we looked at as we went through Daniel 11. Its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. The two legs of iron, the Roman Empire, the two parts of the Roman Empire, because Rome was divided by the Emperor Constantine into two parts, Eastern and Western, and that has been a constant division throughout the last 2,000 years, even a religious division, because the Eastern part of Europe broke away from the Catholic Church in the 11th century, and you've had the Orthodox Church dominate the eastern part of Europe. But the western part of Europe has been dominated by the Catholic Church, and there is a very big difference between the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church. If you look at Revelation 17, where it talks about the great harlot that commits fornication with the kings of the earth, it can only apply to the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, the Vatican, is a country. It is a secular power as well as a religious power. And the church in the West has always tried to control the countries in the West. But in the East, the church has tended to be submissive to the governments that it has been under. So, for example, in Russia, where the Orthodox Church has been the dominant church throughout its history, Moscow, which was called the Third Rome, you know, Rome was Rome, Constantinople was the Second Rome, and where Byzantium was, the Eastern Empire. Moscow was the Third Rome. And, you know, the Orthodox Church in Russia has always been subservient to the state. It's never tried to control, as the Catholic Church has. And the Eastern Church has never been a separate secular power, as the Vatican has been. And so there's a difference there. But it says here, these two legs of iron, you know, the Roman Empire and its divisions, perhaps even symbolizing the two Roman consuls later on. Its feet, partly of iron and partly of clay. Well, that's interesting. And, you know, that ties in with what we know is coming in the future. Because if you look at your feet, and I don't suggest you do it now, but you have 10 toes, unless you were born with some abnormality, you have 10 toes. And we know there's going to be 10 kings or 10 leaders. I don't think it's literal kings. I think president, prime minister, chancellor, you know, it could be anybody. 10 leaders, in other words. But remember, back in ancient times, when these books were written, the word president wasn't a word which they had. So, you know, 10 kings, 10 leaders are going to come together. 10 toes. It's interesting, too, you've got 5 toes on each foot. And, you know, perhaps we're going to see five nations from Western Europe and five from the East who come together to form this beast power. But it says the feet are partly of iron and partly of clay. Well, iron and clay don't mix. And, you know, that's what we're going to see with this revived beast power. It's not going to last very long. You know, when you look at the United States of America, all 50 states are very similar. Wherever you go in America, things are very similar. I know there are variations. One region is different from another, but it's very similar. The United States began as these 13 colonies in the East that were all filled with people from the British Isles, and they all basically felt the same way and thought the same way. Their culture was very similar, and then they spread across the country, and the dominant culture comes out of their culture. Yes, we have other ethnic groups who have contributed to this country, but the dominant culture is still, you know, that still can be traced back to those founding fathers, and even back to the mother country, to England as well. And there are similarities between England and America in that sense. But Europe is very different. Every country in Europe, every state, if you will, that will form this final beast power is different. Each has its own language, its own history, its own culture. In the past, even its own king. And so each is very different, and they're not going to mix together as successfully as Americans have mixed together. However, for a brief period of time, they will be preeminent as a nation over the United States. That's what we can see from Bible prophecy, because this is going to be the greatest power in the world at the time of the end, this beast power. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands. So something supernatural here, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So this leads right into the kingdom of God. And yet again, you see, we've seen in just a few verses here, just in four verses, we've gone from Nebuchadnezzar's empire in Babylon in the 6th century BC right through to the kingdom of God. And yet, this period now that we're living in of American domination of the world is not mentioned. You see what I'm saying when I say we're living in an aberration in history? We're a blip on the historical radar screen. We're just a brief period of time. Okay? The dominant theme of history has been these Gentile empires, this false religious system which is tied to them, this despotism, this continual threat to the people of God, both the physical people of God and also the spiritual people of God. And even in the future, it's going to be the same, because the physical people of God, the United States, Britain, Australia, and so on, are going to suffer during the tribulation, just as the spiritual people of God will be persecuted by this false religious system. So we're going to see that in the future too. Now, this is the dream, and then Daniel goes on and explains it. But, you know, I looked at that just to show you that it goes right through to the kingdom of God. So let's go back to Revelation chapter 13. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. While the Roman Empire fell in 476, but then the deadly wound was healed. Now let's look at the next picture here. That's a picture of the 5th century Pope. Very good photograph, 1500 years old. I'm just kidding here, okay? This is the present Pope. But it's very hard to get a photograph of a Pope from the 400s, okay? Or the 500s. But the point, I put that picture in there to show you that from this point, the church is involved in the politics of Europe. Okay? And this resurrection of the Roman Empire, roughly 100 years after the fall of the Roman Empire, has the church involved. Now, it wasn't a good relationship, but, you know, the church is a major political power by this time. This is Justinian's attempt to revive the Roman Empire in the middle of the 6th century, the 500s. And you see, the empire had been divided into two by Constantine. When the empire in the west that was ruled from Rome collapsed in 476, the empire in the east continued. the borders did not stay constant. This is something, as Americans, we need to understand. Because America's borders have remained constant for a number of decades now. In fact, for all the time that most of you have been alive. I mean, Alaska and Hawaii became states over 40 years ago, so I guess when I was born, America's borders were not quite as they are, but, you know, they've been constant for a long time. This changes your mindset. It really does. There's a certain complacency, I think, that comes when there are secure, I'm not going to say secure borders. I don't think our borders are secure, but our borders have been constant. So, you know, that affects our mindset. We think, therefore, our country may go on forever. But of course, history shows that is not the case, and the Bible shows that is not the case. God raises up kings and removes kings. The map is always changing. It has done constantly throughout history. It is doing so even more now than before. So the Eastern Roman Empire there, which is colored brown on this map, changed its borders many times because it was being pushed back over the centuries. Until in 1453, it collapsed completely. And the capital, Byzantium, which you see there by the Black Sea, was Constantinople as it was originally, was taken over by the Turks and then became Istanbul. And then it became a part of the Muslim Turkish Empire, and it has remained like that ever since. It's still a part of the Turkish Republic today, and it's still predominantly an Islamic part of the world, okay? But, you know, the Eastern Roman Empire continued for almost 1,000 years after the Western Roman Empire collapsed. But during that period of time, there were attempts to try to put back together the Western Empire, and the church was involved. And we see this here. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. Now again, it has to be healed again, because Europe today is divided. But there are attempts to resurrect this European power again. They don't, you know, they don't call themselves the beast power. I'm sure you all understand that. But there was a news item somebody sent me on Friday, not from CNN, which tends to overlook everything of importance around the world. But this was something somebody sent me. I've forgotten where it came from, but last Friday, the German Chancellor, the French President were meeting, and these are the two preeminent leaders of Europe. And they said that they must have a new European constitution by the end of June. And this is the constitution which will create a United States of Europe. And they want that by the end of June. Now, as it happens, they did want it by December, and there was a big meeting of all the leaders of the European countries in December, just 2 months ago, and it failed to reach an agreement on the Constitution. And the feeling now is that there will be a two-tier Europe. This was on the news again last night on the BBC, which I saw on one of the PBS stations around here at 7:30 last night. I think it's repeated at 11:30, somebody told me, but I turn into a pumpkin before 11:30 every night. So I saw it at 7:30, but on this particular item, the Italians were upset. The Italians are always upset, but anyway, the Italians were upset. And they were upset because the British leader and the French and the Germans had been in some sort of secret conference. And their fear was that the Germans, the French, and the British were trying to put together a United States of Europe, leaving Italy with no say in the matter. And the British, the French, and the Germans are the big three. But the French and the Germans are much closer together than the British are with those two, because Tony Blair still sees himself as a bridge between America and Europe. And, you know, he's trying to kind of work things out so that America and Europe stay together. But, you know, bridges can easily be blown up. And at some point, I think, you know, things are going to go wrong here. But the French and the Germans are very much desirous of a united Europe. And, you know, I think, just to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning, what is happening now with the dollar falling, the euro rising, I think we might be going through right now a period of time where significant economic power is transferring from the United States to Europe. and Europe is going to emerge as, you know, as the dominant power. In fact, in May, when 10 new countries joined the European Union on May the 1st, which is what, only 10 weeks away, when 10 new countries joined the European Union will immediately be the biggest single market in the world, the biggest single economy in the world. And when you factor in that the dollar is falling and the euro rising, Europe will be worth even more, because the sum total of our gross national product is going down every day as the dollar falls. The sum total gross national product of Europe is going up every day as the euro rises. So they're worth more than we are, so to speak. And it's all very interesting. And we would have come down even lower were it not for the fact that the Japanese and the Chinese don't want the dollar to fall too much, because they sell most of their products to us. They want Americans to keep on buying, even though we're all in debt in buying their goods. And when I say we, I hope nobody is here. But, you know, I'm just saying that as a nation, we are heavily in debt. And they want us to keep on buying more, because otherwise a lot of people in their countries will be out of work. So they're trying to interfere or intervene to stop the dollar falling too much. So, you know, it's interesting, everything that's going on right now at this particular time. Yeah, you have a question. If the whole thing collapses, I'm sorry? Yes, yes, it will. In fact, you know, just to sum it up, I mean, this is such a big subject that, you know, we could talk about it for hours or even days. But to encapsulate it, let me say this. You know, if the United States is to fall, let's say we go into a depression. I think this is a possible outcome of this all. In fact, we are walking a tightrope right now, because every month, the United States depends on Asian banks buying U.S. Treasury bonds just to keep our economy going. We are borrowing that much money each month, okay? At some point, those banks must wake up and realize that what they're lending to us, they will never get back. And then they will pull the plug. Just as if you've got lots of debts on credit cards, eventually the credit card companies realize, wait a minute, you know, he owes $100,000 on credit cards. His annual income is only $10,000. You know, how's he going to ever pay this back? And then they all decide to pull the plug, okay? And then you're left in a real mess. That can happen to America, too. And if that happened, we could go into a depression every bit as bad as what we experienced in the early 1930s. Now, if America goes down, we will take Japan and some other Asian countries down with us, because they depend so much on selling their products to our markets. I hesitate to say China, because China right now is trying to build stronger economic ties with Europe. So Europe, China might actually survive it all. But you see, if the U.S. and the Asian countries come down, that leaves only one area which can really take over this economic be the economic powerhouse of the world, and that is Europe. The world really divides into three main trading systems. The European Union is one, the Asian area is another, and the Americas, or North America in particular, is another. Many South American countries do a lot of trade with Europe, so I'm not even sure if you could include South America in that. Europe is by far the biggest trading system. You will know, coming from Burkina Faso, I mean, Burkina Faso uses a currency which is tied to the French franc, which no longer exists, but the exchange rate is still determined by the French franc against the euro. So in other words, Burkina Faso is a part of the European economic system. So are all the French-speaking countries in West Africa, except for Guinea and Mali, I think. All the others are a part of this system. And, you know, many countries in Africa are tied in very much with the European economic system. In fact, the European Union has a trade agreement called Lome 1 and Lome 2. Lome is the capital of Togo, which is right next to Ghana. And these agreements were signed. The first one, I think, was signed 30 years ago by what they call the ACP countries. A, Africa, C, Caribbean, P, Pacific. Okay? You know, these countries that were all former colonies of Britain and France and other countries all signed a trade agreement with Europe. And so this is an incredible trading system, and America has been largely cut out. You go to Ghana, and apart from Coca-Cola and Pepsi, there's not much else that's American there. Well, movies, too. You know, one of our biggest exports is culture, or the lack thereof. If you look at our movies. You know, but also food. We grow a lot of food. So those are our two biggest exports now, agricultural products and entertainment. And I'm not sure which is first. But, you know, in Ghana, in West Africa, you can get American movies and you can buy Coke and Pepsi, but I don't think there's much else. We've lost out completely when it comes to cars. All the cars there are either from Europe, mostly from Europe, some are from Japan. But you won't find any American vehicles there, except the American Embassy might have some. You know, we don't sell much else to that part of the world either. So you see, it's an incredible trading system. But, you know, it's all going to come together again. Let's carry on reading and let me explain some things here. So they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast. Now remember the duality here, okay? You know, people did not realize it, but when the false church, the Catholic Church, came to preeminence, people were actually worshiping the dragon. They're worshiping Satan, not worshiping God. You know, there are two churches here in the book of Revelation. There's the true church, which is God's church, and which is described in chapter 12, as you saw in verse 17, as those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. They have the understanding of what Jesus Christ was preaching about the gospel of the good news of the kingdom of God. They have that understanding. See, the false church believes the church is the kingdom of God. And the whole idea of the Holy Roman Empire was that it was the kingdom of God on earth. The church had absolute power. And this has been the dominant power in Western history over the past 2,000 years. And just because it's not there now doesn't mean it's never been there. So they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? You know, the Roman Empire was a great military power, and its revivals have been, in some cases, great military powers. And in the future, it's going to be a great military power again. And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, heresy, false religion. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Now, again, it's dual, because we're going to see this, you know, in the last 42 months prior to Christ's return, this revival of the beast power and the false religion, the beast and the false prophet, the religious leader and the political union of the ten kings, who give their power in 1 hour to the beast. And the 42 months also, on the day for a year principle, takes us through from that period of the Council of Nicaea right up into the Protestant Reformation. It wasn't until 1588 when the Spanish Armada was sunk by the English, that the Protestant Reformation was secure, not just in England, but on the continent of Europe too, to a lesser extent. But England was able to help those on the continent. But you know, the before that, the power of the church was the greatest power in the world. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. So, you know, this is the false religion and the false church that blasphemed his name, claiming to be the government of God on earth. That was brought out beautifully in the program last night on the Medici, just how the church considered itself God on earth. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And you see, that was the history of the church in the 4th century. The church was effectively wiped out after the Council of Nicaea. And so it was overcome by the false church. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation, all the nations of Europe at that time, and North Africa and so on, before the rise of Islam, which drove out Catholic influence from North Africa, all came under this system. All these different tribes, tongues, and nations, and all who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If you don't understand the truth, then you're going to be a part of that system. I mean, when you think about it, there's only really two churches when it comes to Christianity. There's really only two that anybody could decide to join. The Protestant churches have no validity because they broke away from the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church claims to be the church that Jesus Christ founded. So if you don't understand what we understand, then you'd have to really be a Catholic. But if you understand what we understand, that false religion hijacked the true church, and you ended up with this syncretic religion, which is a syncretism of Christianity. There is some of the gospel in there, but largely false religion. Then you would decide, especially if you understand the Bible, you would decide to be a part of this church. But what else is there that has validity? But we understand God's truth, and so we're not going to be deceived by this system. But again, remember, we're going to see a revival of this at the end time. To what extent, I don't know. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. This has been the history of the last 2,000 years, this continual struggle and the continual persecution of God's people and the truth. Let's just go through those maps and look at some of these, revivals of the Roman Empire. This was the first one. Then you had Charlemagne's empire in the 800s. But even between these, the church was still the most powerful institution, and the church dominated everything. And you couldn't do anything without the approval of the church. A king could not even sit on his throne. When the church was upset with King John, bad King John of Robin Hood fame, when the church was upset with John was excommunicated for a while. And that meant that the whole country of England, nobody in England could be baptized, could be married, no funerals. How long do you think the king held out against the church? we're talking here about a very short period of time. I don't remember exactly how long it was. But that's how the church would control these nations. If any king stepped out of line, that was the punishment. He'd be excommunicated. And then the church would not conduct all these rituals. And of course, in the minds of the people, if you weren't baptized, then you could not go to heaven, you see. Every child had to be baptized. And infant mortality was quite high at that time. So, a lot of people lost their children in infancy. And, to somebody, the way people's minds were controlled, if their child died not baptized, they think that child was going to be in hell forever. Here's the Holy Roman Empire that was to last 1,000 years, and almost did, from 962 to 1806. As I said last week, it wasn't holy, it wasn't Roman, and it wasn't an empire. But hey, what's in the name? North Korea calls itself the Democratic Republic, or the People's Republic, or something. It's not democratic, it's not a republic, and the people have no say in anything, but it's the way it is. Charles V's empire. Charles V was the very powerful monarch, and again had this idea of a universal Catholic empire. And Napoleon comes along next, and then Napoleon's domination of Europe as well. And then we come to the Europe of the Kaisers in 1914, another attempt in World War II. And now we come to this final one. We can leave the map on the screen there too. So we're going to see again a revival of this beast power. Now, the European Union as it is now is not the beast power. Because in order to be a part of the European Union right now, you have to be a democracy. And, these countries are not as powerful militarily as the United States is at this time. But, you know, things are going to change. And how they're going to change is, you know, something we can speculate on. But let's continue on here. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. The lamb is Jesus Christ. The horns, remember, symbolic of royal power and authority. So here is a lamb, you know, a monarchy, if you will, but speaking like a dragon. So it's really Satan. Again, the false church, the papacy, the Pope is a monarch. John Paul II, you know, that it's an absolute monarchy. In fact, the Vatican, the church, is the last absolute monarchy left on earth. Absolute monarchy means the monarch can do whatever he wants. He is the supreme authority. And, you know, none of the monarchies of Europe today are absolute monarchies. You know, the monarchs may have a little bit of power, but, you know, they can't do what they want. But in the papacy, that isn't the case at all. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. Now, the first beast was the Roman Empire, see. But here we're looking at this false religious system that exercises all the authority of the first beast and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. You see, this Roman system and the church, you know, are tied so much together. Remember what I said Paul Johnson wrote. He's a historian, still alive in his 70s. He wrote that the church was the continuation of the empire. He also wrote that politics and religion were inseparable. He also described all of this in his book called The Offshore Islanders, written in 1972, about Britain's relationship with Europe. You know, he also showed how, when the Roman Empire collapsed, the church simply continued to administer the military units that the Romans had, now became the parishes, the dioceses of the of the church, the bishoprics, whatever they were called. The same boundaries, basically. And I think I mentioned to you how, and I hope you can go there at some point, in York, the city of York in the north of England, for example, which is a beautifully preserved Roman city. It's still there. You can go to York Minster, the cathedral, which was built just under 1,000 years ago, which is an architectural masterpiece in its own right. But if you go into the foundations, which are not open all the time, so check your times, but when you go down there, you'll see that the church was built right on top of the Roman military headquarters. You see, the church simply continued the empire. The Emperor Constantine was proclaimed as emperor right down there in what is now the basement or the foundation of the church. There's a bust of him outside of the cathedral, reminding people that Constantine was proclaimed emperor there. And Constantine was supposedly the first Christian emperor of the Roman Empire, one of the most significant monarchs in history. He was the one who convened the Council of Nicaea, and he was the one who made the final decision that Sunday should be the day of worship, that Easter should be the commemoration of the death of Christ. Constantine was biblically illiterate. That didn't matter. He had absolute power. He could do what he wanted to do. But here the church, you see, continues this same system. He performs great signs in verse 13, so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. We know the Catholic Church is very much into miracles and, you know, bleeding Madonnas and statues and all kinds of things. You know, it's interesting, when England broke away from the Catholic Church, one of the greatest English leaders, in my opinion, was Oliver Cromwell, who, incidentally, was probably the most powerful commoner, in other words, not a king, the most powerful person in the tribe of Joseph in our common history, going back thousands of years, because Oliver Cromwell, again, rose to absolute power. But he was a dictator. But he had some good ideas, and one of the things he did was he sent his troops into the churches and had all the statues and the idols destroyed. And this was in the middle of the 1600s in England. He was extremely zealous, from his understanding of the Bible, to get rid of all of these statues, because they were all popery, Catholic idols, and they broke the second commandment. Unfortunately, he hadn't read How to Win Friends and Influence People. And his zeal was misunderstood by some, so when he died, they turned against some of those things. But anyway, but you see, the church, was very fond of statues and very fond of signs and miracles and all that kind of thing. But, it seems also from this that this is going to be a bigger thing in the future. Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows who the next pope's going to be? I mean, I think it's interesting. One of the, in fact, I think two now of the most likely contenders are from West Africa, where you have a strong tradition of voodoo and, superstition and miracles and things. And, who knows what's going to happen in the future? I think one of the cardinals is from Nigeria and one from Benin, which is next to Nigeria. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. The image of the beast? The beast was the Roman Empire. The image, well, when you look in a mirror in the morning, you see your own image, unfortunate as it may be. But that's you. That's what you look like. Not a nice way to start the day, is it? But anyway, for some of you anyway. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. You see, the church is the image of the beast. It isn't the actual beast. It wasn't the great military power that Rome was. But remember, the strength of the church, Daniel 7, remember, in verse 8, Daniel 7 and verse 8 mentions this horn had eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. So the power of the church was in the fact that it controlled the minds of people. One good book you might want to read on this is William Manchester's book about the Middle Ages, which he titled A World Lit Only by Fire, because the world was not enlightened. In fact, again, that comes out in this series on the Medici on PBS, which is available on video. 1-800-PLAY-PBS, if you want to buy it. I memorized it last night. And, it brings out how, from the time the Roman Empire fell until the Renaissance, 1,000 years later, the knowledge and understanding that had been gained during the period of Roman domination, the Roman Empire, was lost because the church just suppressed all knowledge. And that's how powerful the church was and in controlling the minds of people. So it wasn't an enlightened society. And then, people started to question things in the Renaissance. But the church won in Italy at that time. But not in the Protestant countries, which had broken away from the church. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. But the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And this was very much the case. Anybody who disagreed was put to death. They showed one guy last night being burned at the stake. And he had been a monk. And he had just he was also a scientist. And he had done some scientific research which didn't agree with the church. And so they burned him at the stake. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. Now, this is future. And that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666, which happened to be my American visa number when I came here. So I was the butt of a number of jokes at that time. But exactly what this 666 is, I think this is something that still is in the future. And exactly what this is talking about is still in the future. But it mentions how they receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. I mean, with all the technology we've got now, I think, many of you will understand that it's possible to have a chip, for example, microchip to be, in your wrist there, and all kinds of personal information could be there. It's possible to do that now. Well, they could put it on your forehead if they wanted to. But this is still something in the future, and with technology advancing the way that it is, who knows exactly what it's going to be in the future. But this seems to tie in with Sabbath, with the Sabbath observance, because it's saying here that no one can be a part of this economic system, which is going to be based around this revived Roman Empire. Nobody can be a part of it unless they have this in their forehead or on their hand. Terry. Well, what you said too brings out a point. You see, all of this can be put across as something positive to people, that all this personal information could save your life if you end up in a hospital. And I mean, that's the same thing that's happening to a certain extent now with national security, not just here, but in other countries too. We're giving up freedoms in certain areas for security. Some of it may be justified, but the point is that it can all be put across in a very positive way. And perhaps this also ties in a little bit with concerns about security. But somehow, in the future, at some point, as this system that's centered on Europe, the revived Roman Empire, the beast power, comes together, in order to be a part of that system, in order to buy and sell, to trade, in order to work, you have to have this. And again, it seems to tie in too with obviously the persecution of God's people, the fact that there are these two religious systems, false religion and the truth. The identifying sign of God's people is the fact that we keep the Sabbath. And the false religious system will not permit that. Historically, that has not been the case in history. Sunday observance has been the case throughout history as a result of what happened at the Council of Nicaea, the decision that was made. And, most people work 6 days a week. When I first started working in the late 60s, most people worked 6 days a week, or five and a half anyway. You did half a day on Saturday. And it's going to become harder for people to keep the Sabbath. That's the point here. Somebody else had a question. Young lady, you had your hand up? Can you speak up? Sorry. That's a good question, and initially that's what it could be. But we do know that this system does then persecute the church. I think we can just put two and two together here. And of course, the basic theme is the struggle between these two churches, between the false religious system and how it persecutes the true church of God. But when it starts, it may not be. It may be something connected with security. Who knows? Again, it's in the future. All we can do is speculate. We don't know exactly how that is going to be fulfilled. Let's just move on a little here. We've got a few minutes left. And I looked, and behold, a lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written on their foreheads. You see, in contrast to the mark of the beast in the forehead. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the voice of many waters, and like the voice of loud thunder. And I heard the sound of harpists playing their harps. And they sang, as it were, a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders, and no one could learn that song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. These are the ones who were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These were redeemed from among men, being first fruits to God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. So here again we've got the... Remember, Israel, that these 144,000 were sealed prior to these last events that are going to take place. Then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, Now, let's not get into this. We've only got a minute. I'll leave that until tomorrow, okay? I don't want to rush through it. So tomorrow we really have to go from there right through to chapter 20. But I think chapter 17 we can go through rather quickly because Revelation 13 and 17 are parallel chapters. Revelation 17, Daniel 2, Daniel 7 are parallel chapters. So I think we should be able to get over that pretty quickly, and we should be able to finish tomorrow, okay? Any final questions for 2 minutes? We can turn the mic off now. It generally doesn't pick up questions anyway.